You're listening to Coyote Radio, broadcasting from the campus of Cal State San Bernardino. Coyote Radio, howling worldwide.
Welcome to the Evergreen Show, where we explore creative and effective strategies for keeping our planet Earth healthy and beautiful. Every day and everywhere, actions people take in their community have far-reaching impacts. The good news is that you and your family can be active citizens in support of planet Earth. How can you accomplish this? Here are your hosts, Dr. Darlene Stoner and Laura Terrell.
Thank you for joining us for the Evergreen Show. I'm Darlene.
And I'm Laura. We have a great show lined up for you today about an endangered animal which lives in the Channel Islands in Southern California. I'll bet that many of our listeners have heard of Catalina Island, which is 26 miles from the coast of Southern California, but most don't know that there are several Channel Islands, not just one.
We've titled this show, If an Island Fox Could Talk. Island foxes are located on Catalina Island and on other Channel Islands, which are located northward from Catalina Island.
To introduce you to island foxes is our guest, Carrie Dearborn. Carrie is the Vice President of Education for Friends of the Island Fox. This nonprofit organization works to educate the public about the endangered island fox. It also supports conservation efforts on the Channel Islands to save the island fox, whose population numbers have fallen drastically from its original numbers on the island just a few years ago.
Welcome,
Carrie.
Thank
you, Darlene and Laura.
Thank you.
For inviting me and for thank you for giving the island fox the opportunity to speak to your audience today.
Great. And I'd also like to add that Carrie received her master's in environmental education recently from California State University, San Bernardino.
Thank you. I did. And I have to say that the program really helped me to integrate my environmental work with educational methodologies and teaching strategies.
That's super. That's its aim. Okay. And Carrie, you're with the Friends of the Island Fox organization. And how did that organization originate?
Well, our president, Pat Meyer, became aware of the island fox's situation in around 2002 when she was working on a lecture for the Los Angeles Zoo. And she worked with the National Park up the Channel Islands National Park, and they encouraged her to start the nonprofit to increase the education in the local community about the island fox and its troubles.
Okay. And so the goals then of the organization, education and...
It's to create public awareness about the endangered island fox and to raise funds to support education and research and the conservation measures to ensure that the fox does survive into the future.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And Carrie, I'm wondering, can you tell me what the island fox looks like?
Well, they are, fortunately for them, they are a cute little animal. Little being a key word, they are very small. They only stand about 12 inches tall, and they weigh about 3 to 4 pounds, very similar in size to a small house cat.
Wow.
They look very much like the gray fox that's on the mainland. That's their ancestor. So they have a gray head and back with kind of sides that are a russet or a rufous color, kind of reddish. And then their belly and their chin are white. But they do have a shorter tail than the mainland gray fox.
And even though it is as small as it is it the largest native mammal on the Channel Islands?
It is, and it's pretty amazing to think that this little fox that only stands about a foot tall is the largest native mammal out there on the Channel Islands. And for thousands of years, it lived out there with the plants and the other animals on the islands, and that had a huge effect on the evolution of other species on the islands.
So what does it eat?
Well, it is more omnivorous than the mainland gray fox, and part of this has to do with the fact that it is isolated on the island. It changes its diet seasonally, so in the wintertime, it does eat what we would typically think of a fox eating. It eats the small deer mice that are out on the island, but come the spring, it changes its diet to feed on birds and bird eggs and also on insects. Then when we get into the summer and the fall, it becomes very much a fruit eater, eating the native fruit from the different Catalina, different plants, the Catalina cherry, the lemonade berry, the toyon. It's eating all these different kinds of berries, and then also insects as well. So it changes its diet throughout the year, and it's much more omnivorous than the mainland gray fox.
Right. So what is its closest relative? Is the gray fox its closest relative?
It is the gray fox, mm-hmm. and we frequently are, people contact us and say that they've seen an island fox in their backyards on the mainland, when actually what they're seeing is a gray fox. The island fox is about 20% smaller than the mainland fox, and that has to do with the fact that it is living on this on these islands. And even though the island, Santa Cruz Island, is about the size, a little bit larger than the size of Manhattan, it's still a very small ecosystem. And in order to survive, the foxes had to get smaller to survive out there on the islands with the limited resources that it has.
So is the island fox on all of the Channel Islands?
No. There are 8 Channel Islands, and Anacapa and Santa Barbara Islands are just too small for even this small fox to survive out there. And there also is no fresh water on those 2 islands. So they are only found on the northern islands of San Miguel, Santa Rosa, and Santa Cruz, which are part of the Channel Islands National Park. Then they're found on Catalina. And then they're also found on San Nicolas and San Clemente Islands, which are owned by the U.S. Navy.
And are there different subspecies on each of the 6 islands, or is the island fox very much similar on every island?
Well, they are genetically different from each other, from one island to the other. So they are actually considered to be 6 different subspecies. So that becomes a trickier thing when something is happening to foxes, say, on Santa Rosa Island. It's not like we can bring foxes over from one of the other islands, because they have been genetically separated from each other for enough time that they are different subspecies.
Wow, that's incredible. What are some of the differences between the different subspecies?
Well, it has everything to do with size. Some of them are actually smaller than others or larger. The Catalina foxes are the biggest, so they're a little bit heavier and taller in size. Tail length, for some reason, and nobody really knows why, is quite variable, so that on San Miguel, the most northern population, they have 15 vertebrae in their tail, where the San Nicolas Island foxes have 22 vertebrae in their tail. So there's this huge variance in vertebrae in the tail. And the color is also slightly different from island to island, because the islands are very different in the vegetation that they have. So San Nicolas Island is really just a wind-swept sand dunes and some small scrub and grass. So the foxes there are actually much lighter in color than, say, the foxes on the islands that have more of a woodland, which would be like Santa Cruz and Catalina. So there's a little bit of difference in color, a little bit of difference in size, and the Catalina foxes have a little bit longer nose. So they're all a little bit different from each other.
That's really, really interesting. So can the island fox be found on the mainland of California, or is it only on these islands?
No, it is only found on the Channel Islands and nowhere else in the world. Very much like, say, the Galapagos tortoises that are only on those different islands. The same thing is true with the island foxes. They are only found on the Channel Islands off the coast of Southern California.
Okay, so we know that there's been a population change that's happened with the island fox. What kind of population change has occurred on the Channel Islands?
Well, I think the most dramatic example is the Santa Rosa foxes. They had a historic population, they believe, that was around 1,700 foxes. And that was estimated in 1994, that there were about 1,700 foxes. But by 2000, just 6 years later, there were only 15 foxes left on that island.
Wow.
And the same thing was true with San Miguel. The population had originally been the smallest of any of them, only 450, but they also got down to just 15 individuals. So across the islands that are part of the Channel Islands National Park, we saw a huge decline in the population, as well as at the same time on Catalina Island, but for different reasons.
Who monitors the population of the island fox?
Well, we have an unusual situation for an endangered species in that these different islands are monitored by different people, so, and different groups, so that the northern islands are monitored by the National Park Service. They're part of Channel Islands National Park. And Santa Cruz is also partially monitored by the Nature Conservancy. Catalina is its own separate entity. That's the Catalina Island Conservancy. And then the other two islands that are run by the Navy actually have Navy biologists, and then outside contractors who come in to work for the Navy that monitor the foxes on those islands. But one very important thing that has helped the fox is that every year all of those people come together at a conference to discuss the problems and the solutions that they have found on their individual islands.
Okay. The island fox is a prime example of an endangered animal that could become extinct. And it's really one of the many animals that has the potential to disappear. We're talking about biodiversity, the richness of life, rapidly disappearing at a faster pace than any time in the history that we know about, except for the extinction of the dinosaurs. At this time, the rate of disappearance is 100 to 1,000 times faster than normal if we look at it worldwide. Plants and animals primarily become endangered or go extinct, we know, from habitat destruction, invasive species coming in, or toxic pollution. Looking at the island fox, which of these factors has affected the island fox so it might become an endangered species?
It's actually all of these. Habitat destruction, invasive species, toxic pollution, all of those have had an effect on the island fox.
Okay. Before we go into kind of the details about the history, I want to just let our listeners know that we're talking with Carrie Dearborn, who's the Vice President of Education for Friends of the Island Fox. And the title of today's episode is, If an Island Fox Could Talk. Okay, so we know that all of these, habitat destruction, invasive species, and toxic pollution, have contributed to making the island fox an endangered species. So what's kind of the history? How do these factors work into the history of all of this?
Well, the island foxes had been out there on those islands for thousands of years, had evolved to be in balance with the plants and other animals that were out there. And when people, when Western Europeans first came, they saw the islands and thought they would be great places to set up ranches and farms because their animals wouldn't have to be fenced in. They couldn't get off. So a lot of domestic animals were taken out to the different islands. And you can imagine what damage a goat or a sheep could do to an island where there had never been large animals who ate the plants before. And so one of the first problems was the domestic animals, goats, sheep, pigs, rabbits in some cases, were out there on the islands really destroying the plant life. And since the fox depends on the fruit from plant life for at least half of the year, this started to have an initial effect. But people also brought rats, which caused problems on the islands, to reduce the amount of birds and reptiles on the islands, which are also somewhat part of the fox's diet. And then after World War II, when DDT started to be used on the mainland, got into the watersheds, out into the ocean, locally here especially, and it didn't affect the island fox directly, but it affected him indirectly because there was another animal that lived out there on the islands, the bald eagle, which as a large bird of prey is very territorial. It kept away other large birds of prey, and it didn't eat the fox because its diet was primarily fish and seabirds. So when DDT was introduced into the sea life along coastal California, it caused the bald eagle to go extinct. And when the eagle was gone, there was a niche left open out there on the islands for a large bird of prey, especially since we now had living out there feral pigs, wild pigs, feral sheep and goats, and then also on one of the islands on Santa Rosa, people brought deer and elk out to the islands for hunting. And golden eagles were attracted to these mammals in after DDT was banned, because they started to recover, but we didn't have any bald eagles locally that were recovering. So we ended up with a population of golden eagles out there. And while feral pigs, piglets and baby sheep are available in the spring, they're not available year-round, so they were attracted to the islands for that reason. And then when they didn't have piglets to eat, they realized that the island foxes were about the same size or even smaller, and they were the perfect food to start feeding to their chicks. And they started to eat the island foxes at a very rapid pace in the 1990s. And that's when we started to see this huge decline on the northern islands that are part of the Channel Islands National Park. And at the same time, Catalina, we started to see in 1998 horrible decline of the foxes on Catalina, but there were no golden eagles, and they couldn't figure out at first what was happening. And somehow, either because someone's dog had not been vaccinated for distemper, a canine disease, or because a raccoon with canine distemper had been transported over to the island on someone's boat, probably without their knowing, probably as a stowaway, canine distemper was introduced into the island fox population, and within 2 years they lost almost 90% of the foxes on Catalina Island. So in a short amount of time, and all of it coming to a head at about the year 2000, we ended up with populations in a horrible decline in Santa Rosa and San Miguel, each with only 15 foxes each on those islands. And if something wasn't done rapidly, we were going to see extinction across four different islands of the island fox.
Okay, so we had initially we had habitat destruction because of invasive species that were brought in, and we had then had the toxic pollution that indirectly through the pesticide DDT that impacted another species, wiping out bald eagles. Golden eagles came in, and they fed on a variety of animals, and including the island fox. So you've got golden eagles feeding on island foxes, and then you've also got distemper that came in. So you've got a whole variety of things that come in into the mix.
Yes, but all of them have the same thing in common. It all came through people.
All came through people. Okay. I understand that there's another new problem that's affecting the population of the island fox, and this is on Catalina Island. Is that it?
Yes, this is on Catalina. And in this situation, it's not dogs, but cats. And they have a problem with feral cats on some of the islands. And on Catalina only, an ear mite that initially came from cats was transmitted to the island foxes. And then within the island fox population, this ear mite began to evolve, and it became a mite that is now causing cancer in the ears of the foxes on Catalina Island, so that now 33% of the population has this cancer from the ear mites. It's the population with the second highest cancer rate in the world, being second only to the Tasmanian devil. So that has become a serious problem on Catalina Island, and now we're seeing that climate change is also having an effect on the island foxes.
Okay. We've been talking with Carrie Dearborn, Vice President for Friends of the Island Fox, a nonprofit established to provide education and conservation for the island fox and the Channel Islands in Southern California. We'll have more questions for Carrie after the break. You're listening to The Evergreen Show with Laura Terrell and Darlene Stoner. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to The Evergreen Show with your hosts, Darlene Stoner and Laura Terrell. Our guest for this episode is Carrie Dearborn with Friends of the Island Fox. I'm your host, Laura Terrell. Carrie, the Friends of the Island Fox have played a key role in partnership with the Channel Islands National Park in saving the Island Fox. What are some of the contributions that the Friends of the Island Fox have made?
Well, we have raised funds for over 50 radio collars now that go onto the fox to track them, to give us a first alert as to the possibility of golden eagles returning and feeding on foxes again, or disease coming in killing foxes, because radio collars locate foxes for us, and they also tell us if a fox has died so that the biologists can find it and figure out what's wrong with it. We've also helped to fund necropsies to determine health problems with the fox, and we participated in helping to keep the pens interesting for the foxes to live in while they were in captive breeding, because that's how the numbers were initially increased. And we also have done a lot of education outreach. We were in over 60 schools last year, and we've talked to over 4,000 students in the past couple of years, as well as over 8,000 people out at community events. And we have an ambassador school program where we actually get kids involved in a service learning project, and we've had different schools raise money for radio collars and for vaccinations for foxes out in the wild, so that we're actually getting kids involved in what's actually going on out there on the islands.
Is there a website you all have that we could look at?
We do. It's www.islandfox.org.
Great. And can you tell us how the Island Fox is doing today?
Well, populations are doing much better across the islands. In fact, Catalina and Santa Cruz have nearly recovered half of their original population. San Miguel and Santa Rosa are still struggling a little bit, and all of these populations are going to require constant monitoring into the future. But the more people we know about how they can impact the foxes, the better chance we have of stopping disease being introduced or other issues out there on the islands. So they're actually doing much better. It's a very positive situation.
That's fantastic to hear.
Okay. Why is it important for people to be involved in saving a fox that only lives on a few islands? I'm sure that people have asked that question. And how are people interconnected with the island fox?
Well, the island fox only lives in one place in the world, and we kind of have a moral obligation, I would say. We try to get people in other places around the world to protect their rainforests and various animals. We have this endangered species right off our own coast. If we can't help to save it, we surely can't tell people in other places in the world that they should change what they do to try and save it. But the other thing is that this fox, it requires the same things that we need. It needs safe water and safe resources, food that isn't polluted, and we need those same things. So what the fox needs to survive and to be healthy, we need those same things. So helping the fox is also helping ourselves.
Carrie, since many of our listeners may not travel to the Channel Islands to see the island fox, how could they see an island fox?
Well, you can, off our website, you can see video of island foxes, including foxes being released back into the wild. There are also several zoos who have island foxes, the Los Angeles Zoo, the Santa Barbara Zoo, Coyote Point Museum, which is in San Mateo, the Orange County Zoo, and the Charles Paddock Zoo in Atascadero, and even the Hogle Zoo in Salt Lake City, Utah, have island foxes. If you go out to Catalina, you can have a special treat because the Catalina Island Conservancy has an education fox named Tachi, who was abandoned by her mother, who's been raised, therefore, by people that you can see up close out there on Catalina Island.
Great. That sounds like lots of fun. Carrie, on each show, we talk about evergreen actions, which are environmental behaviors that we can all do to help planet Earth. What suggestions would you have for our listeners about some evergreen actions they could do?
Well, an easy one that everybody can do is to be a responsible pet owner. So make sure that your pets are vaccinated against common diseases and that you don't take your pets out into areas where wild animals live, because it is very easy for disease to be passed from your pet out to the wild, as well as your pet getting diseases from the wild as well. Also, understanding what you do around your home that can affect living things in the ocean and in distant ecosystems. So reducing our use of pesticides in our yards and in agriculture, that can help to keep not only that direct agricultural food clean for us to eat, but also ocean food webs, and that makes them have healthy fish for us as well as for bald eagles. And also conserving energy, because as I kind of said, that the climate change is now threatening island foxes. The drought that we've had the past couple of years, we've seen that that's reducing the number of pups that are born out there in the wild. So even when you just turn off a light and reduce your carbon footprint by turning off that electricity, you're helping to contribute to positive change and reduce the effects of climate change.
Okay. Great ideas there, Carrie. If an island fox could talk, what would it say? You've talked for the island fox today. So what would it say if it had a chance to?
Well, I think it would say, I'm a role model for sustainability. I live on small islands with limited resources. In order to survive, I moderate my use of the available resources, and I give back to the ecosystem. I think he'd also say that I'm an example of how seemingly small gradual changes to the environment can have unintentional consequences and cause an ecosystem to tip completely out of balance. There's no barrier that separates the mainland from the sea and the islands. We're all interconnected. The choices that you people make around your homes and at your schools affect local wildlife, including plants and animals that live in the ocean and on the Channel Islands. And thirdly, I think the island fox would say thank you, because without help from people, the island fox on San Miguel and Santa Rosa Islands would be extinct. When people come together and combine their efforts, they can make a dramatic, positive difference. Saving the island fox wasn't just the work of scientists and biologists. It was also the work of school children and teachers, community groups, and conservation organizations. So thank you. And thank you, Darlene and Laura, for the opportunity to share the Island Fox's story on the Evergreen Show, because the choices that people make in their everyday lives can have a dramatic effect on local wildlife.
Well, Carrie, thank you so much for sharing about the Island Fox. In today's episode on the Island Fox, we have learned about how people people power, through friends of the Island Fox Group, have helped this endangered species increase its population numbers. Carrie, can you tell us one more time what the website for Friends of the Island Fox is, if our listeners want further information?
It is www.islandfox.org.
Okay. Carrie, in addition to your work with Friends of the Island Fox, I know you write and you have your own blog. I'm sure that some of our listeners would like to check out your blog, so maybe you could just give a little word about it and let them know how they could access it.
Okay, thank you. It is www.animalbytes, and that's animalbytes.net. And I write on different conservation and biodiversity topics. So for the holidays, I did 31 days of green holiday actions. And I did January, I focused on green food choices. And right now in February, I've been focusing on citizen science and biodiversity projects.
Super, super. I just want to thank you for joining us on the Evergreen Show to share about the plight of the island fox and for telling us about your blogs. And I'm sure that some of our listeners will want to check that out. I know that our listeners will also want to find out other places that they can find out about endangered animals and plants. And we have some sites that are available. Laura, you want to give us a couple of sites?
Sure. The island fox on the Channel Islands in Southern California is one of many endangered plants and animals throughout the world. In the United States, the Endangered Species Act was passed in 1973. This legislation authorized the protection of endangered species to the Departments of Interior and Commerce, as well as to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the National Marine Fisheries Service. In order to review a list of about 300 different endangered species in the United States, you can look at the website www.fws.gov. FWS stands for Fish and Wildlife Service. Again, that's www.fws.gov. Each state has its own list of endangered animals and species, and these lists are similar to the federal list, but they might vary slightly. In California, you can find the California list on www.dfg.ca.gov. And DFG stands for Department of Fish and Game. Once again, that's www.dfg.ca.gov.
We'd like to hear from you. We look forward to hearing about how you've helped in threatened or endangered species. We're looking for topics for future shows. Our email address is evergreen@csusb.edu. That's evergreen spelled E-V-E-R-G-R-E-E-N. And that's evergreen@csusb.edu. We hope to hear from you. That's it for our episode. We call an island, If an Island Fox Could Talk. Please tune in for our weekly Evergreen show at the same time. For each show, we'll be continuing to explore creative and effective strategies for keeping planet Earth healthy and beautiful.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us.